Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk! What a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance! Great save by Markstrom!
Here's Kachuk! Oh, what a save by Demko!
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Thursday? A Masters Thursday at that. I'm Scott Rintoul. She is Karen Sermon. How are you today?
Oh, I am wonderful this morning, Scotty. The sun is shining. The azaleas are out. We got a Canadian atop the leaderboard or up there. It's a pretty good Thursday.
Okay, you have nothing about the sun or the azaleas putting that smile on your face. It's Corey Connors being tied for the lead. It's very, very, very early. He's 2 under, but you decided you'd make a little Canadian wager on Corey Connors.
You know what? When I looked at that, I'm like, okay, he's, you know, up there. Course conditions are difficult today. If he can get through and under par, that might set him up for a good tournament. I looked online, plus 5,000. I thought, what's a little $5 bet, Scott? Not going to hurt anybody.
He tied 10 back in November, likes the course. He's not intimidated by it. Let's hope that the Canadian is in there come the weekend. Let's just get through today. Getting in the red is a very good step in that direction. He is one off the lead right now. Hideki Matsuyama is 3 under par at Augusta. I'm Rintoul. She's Sermon, hence the name Rintoul and Sermon. And we want you involved in this 960, 960, or 650, 650. Those are your text donations. And with the Masters in mind, Karen, I talked to you a couple of days ago, and we agreed on this. People have always had sports bucket lists. But I wonder if people actually have reevaluated their sports bucket list, their bucket lists in life, as we've all been indoors and isolating and quarantining, depending on where you're at with your situation over the past year and change, and thinking, okay, I don't know when I'm going to get to travel again, but when I do, there are some things I want to check off, given the uncertainty that this world has presented in the last year.
Absolutely. Like, I was thinking back, and it's been over a year since we can travel for fun. Basically, even travel, Scotty. I mean, so many of us haven't been on an airplane since me. It was last January. I don't know how long ago it was for you, but it's been quite a long time since we've been able to be on an airplane and go somewhere, even pick up the car and go for a road trip. So when thinking about this, I was like, you know what? I think just in general, going somewhere when we can is going to be a huge, big thing, but does that mean maybe you save up for that, you know, extra special trip? Is there somewhere now you want to make this your next trip that you can go somewhere? It's going to be bigger and better than maybe what you thought it could be. So I like this idea because I know for a lot of people, the Masters is on their bucket list. And it looks beautiful today. And it's so nice to see patrons back at the Masters. But so, yeah, like there's a ton of sports around the world and huge sporting events that I know a lot of people would be like, that's the one I want to go to.
Is your surefire number one set in stone? Has it changed? Or do you have like three or four different ones that they're all about equal on your sports bucket list, an event you want to go to?
Like personally for myself, there's a couple and they're probably, if I had the chance to go to all of them, any one of them, I would put them all up there. Like I was fortunate enough a couple of years ago to knock off two in one trip. I got to do Wrigley Field and I got to go to South Bend and see Notre Dame play in Notre Dame. So those were both of my bucket lists, especially Notre Dame Stadium. So that was pretty cool. For me, it's World Cup final in Europe, which would be pretty cool. And I really want to see the final at Wimbledon. I want some strawberries and cream. I want some breakfast at Wimbledon. I want the grass. Now, specifically, I'd like to see Roger Federer in the final, but still, I think for me, one of the biggest things on my bucket list would be seeing Sunday final, men's final, and women's on the Saturdays, the final at Wimbledon. I think just the spectacle around that would be amazing.
See, the final in certain sports doesn't matter as much for me, personally. It really doesn't. Like, sure, who wouldn't want to be at the biggest game on the planet when it's all going down? But Wimbledon, for example. Wimbledon is consideration for me in my top five. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have it at the top, but Wimbledon's there in consideration. You balance that with the U.S. Open only because of the raucous atmosphere. When I consider tennis, I think of the fact that, and this is some of my events as well, and I'm going to list off a couple in a second, Karen, but when I think of some of these events, it's about the amount of stuff you can see as well. So if you go early in Wimbledon, you can see a lot of matches, and you can spend the entire day. And yes, who wouldn't want to be at the final, but there's a trade-off. One match, one day, that's that. It's kind of like the Super Bowl. There will be a lot of people who text in today and say, The Super Bowl is on my bucket list. I want to get there before all is said and done. One of mine, Karen, as we spin that Wimbledon thought from you into something that's on my list, and I thought about it again this week. March Madness regional. I don't want to be there for the Final Four as much as I want to be there for the regional. I've never had a chance to do it. I would love to do it. I want to go on Thursday and Saturday or Friday and Sunday in whatever location it is. If it's somewhere in the Pacific Northwest like Seattle, which has hosted before, Portland, there are places that have these tournaments, and you get to sit there around the clock. And there are teams you don't know anything about, but you can see so many games in one day. And it's that nonstop action aspect that has me so excited about the NCAA tournament that I want to go to for March Madness.
So it's funny that you mentioned that, Scotty, because I've got a bunch of different big events here, you know, on my list of things. And fourth on that list, in just brainstorming some ideas, was the first weekend of March Madness. Because I'm exactly there with you. You could have the ability to see some upsets, some of these smaller colleges, you know. They're still D1 colleges, but you get to see that North Texas get the upset in the first round. I think
Loyola, Chicago, you name it.
Right? You know, I'd go just for Sister Jean, but yes. Just to see those upsets and to see some of those players play. And, you see it in the one shiny moment after the tournament's done and the players that it's their last game. They might be fourth year, fifth year seniors, Scott. And just the emotion for some of these players, especially for some of these smaller schools that do get into the tournament. And I think it would just be absolutely phenomenal. I know one that maybe is kind of, I don't know if it's up there for you, and I know maybe some of our listeners, but this is a kind of niche market, but I think the event itself might be quite enticing for people. The Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, it's not on my top five, but I know for a lot of people it is, Karen, right? And it's the whole pomp and circumstances you referred to with the Masters, and it's the whole day event. I know that we're going to get a text immediately from one of our colleagues who has been before, wants to go again, and I think there's a lot of people there with you. It's such a unique event, and putting the hats on and all those different things.
They're fascinators, Scotty. And
maybe for you. For me, they're hats, Karen.
Yes, but have some mint juleps and rub shoulders with some of the people there. I just think it's the first one of the year. It's always the biggest one, you know. I used to go down to Hastings every year when it was on and watch it down there and watch the live races there just because it's a fun event. It's the start of what could be the Triple Crown. And I think that's why it makes it the biggest one. Plus, you know, all the fun ways you can dress up down there. So I think that'll be on some people's list. It's funny, we just got a text into 960-960, and this listener, my bucket list item was to go see a game at Wrigley Field. The trip was planned and paid for my bachelor party last June, .. I think that's what a lot of people had too. I'm curious to see, like, if there was sporty events you had on a bucket list this past year that got canceled, like...
Oh, I know a ton of people. I know a ton of people who had things on there. For example... This was the first season the Raiders were playing in Vegas. I know people who bought season tickets, and obviously because of travel restrictions, couldn't go, and there's no fans in the stadium and all of those different types of things. So I agree with you. There are a ton of things that people would have planned last year. We're getting some more texts in. Will in Victoria says, F1 Singapore night race under the lights. So here's the thing about an F1 race to me. Personally, I'm not that into it. Like, I don't watch F1 on television, and that's a future conversation we're going to have because there's a lot of people who've gotten into F1 by virtue of the Netflix series that has come out during the course of this pandemic. But specifically for F1, like, I'm not that interested personally right now. I don't have much of an investment in Formula One racing. But to go to Singapore, that sounds pretty great. And so part of this might depend on the destination and the trip that comes around it as opposed to just the sporting event itself. I'll give you another one that... Again, niche market, but if you consider the trip, I think a lot of people go, oh, I could sign up for that.
Yeah.
The Tour de France. The Tour de France would be fantastic because look where you're going and look what it's about. It's less about watching the cyclists as intently as those who are really into pedal power will watch it. It's more just about the experience itself. And I really, I think that's what we're getting at here. And that's why some of the things that land on my list are there as opposed to just the, well, this is a sport I follow more than any others.
So I have a quick little story about the Tour de France. In 1999, I was fortunate enough to go to Europe with my high school band, of all things. And after that trip was over, my parents and I went to France. And Scott, we had one day planned. We were going to Versailles for a huge, you know, tour of Versailles, the castle, what, one of the Louis lived there. And
one
when
of
we
the
come
Louis.
Back,
it wasn't Luongo. I can say that. No. It was not Pasaglia. It was not Luongo.
But we get back off the train, back in downtown Paris on the Champs-Élysées, and there's people lined up. Now, you know, I'm big into sports, but it just didn't comprehend at the time what was going on. It was the final leg of the Tour de France, 1999. We know what year that is. That's the first year that Lance Armstrong won his, at the time, first Tour de France. And so that Champs-Élysées leg, they go back and forth, right? So I have pictures of this yellow jersey in a blur just going by me, because that's him going on the final leg. So just, I happened to be in the right place at the right time. I mean, if I was to go and do it again, I'd probably go to, like, the Pyrenees and see them in that stage, because that's
yes.
pretty cool.
This is what I'm talking about.
Right? But yeah, I have seen the final leg of the Tour de France. And at the time, before we knew that he cheated and got everything taken away from him, it was pretty cool to see Lance win the first of his, what, 7 Tour de Frances? So pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds like an outstanding trip, one I'd like to take at some point. Tour de France is another one for me. Like, the actual sporting aspect, like, I'm into cycling. Not a lot of people probably listening here are as into cycling as I am, and there's probably a bunch that are more into mm-hmm. it, but I would just love to go for the trip. You said World Cup soccer in Europe. It doesn't have to
yes.
be in Europe for me. It can be other places. They're like Qatar. I'm not real interested in that one in particular, but
you,
World
you
Cup
don't
is
wanna, like,
yeah.
die of heat.
Well, there's a bunch of other issues around that
yes.
as well.
Yeah, I guess.
World Cup of soccer for me is probably the top of the list. And I know it's going to come to North America. This is going to sound bad because when it's here, I'm going to try to go. I'd rather go somewhere else to see it.
Right? I know.
It doesn't have to be Europe for me. I'd love to go in South America. There mm-hmm. are lots of places around this planet I'd love to go see it. But I want to go abroad to watch the World
right.
Cup, and I want to experience that atmosphere. And that's why things like a Premier League match come into play for me, just to mm-hmm. see that rivalry. And a little closer to home, you're going to find this odd given my background. I have never been to an American college football game. And so
really?
On my bucket list is a rivalry game. It doesn't have to be SEC. It doesn't have to be Pac-12. Doesn't have to be Big Ten. I'm less mm-hmm. concerned about that. I want to see a really good rivalry game in a packed college stadium when we're all able to do that again.
You know what? Because I was thinking about this too, and I've seen one college football game now, obviously at Notre Dame and Vanderbilt. The game itself was a dud, but it was just being there. But something like, say, Death Valley, LSU, Alabama, or the Iron Bowl, Alabama, Auburn. Like, those are huge rivalry games. And generally speaking, until, you know, for a time, Auburn and Alabama were at least competitive with each other. LSU, you know, competitive with Alabama. Obviously, this past year was a bit of a dud for LSU, but they were the defending champs coming into this season. So I do think that, yeah, to be inundated with those crazy fans, Scott, because we know, especially in the South, those college football fans, like, football is life. They live and breathe Alabama football. If you go down there, that's their entire household is Alabama football. And if someone like an LSU fan comes into their house, they're probably not actually allowed in. Like, that's how this rivalry goes.
Well, and you know how into football I am. I know you're a big Cowboys fan as well. And if you're going to parlay that idea of how crazy it is around those games and how crazy the atmosphere is around college football, like, while we're making the bucket list and while we're dreaming a little bit,
yeah.
I think you'd want to make it one of those, okay, whether it's Texas or something else, let's go so mm-hmm. you can see a high school football game in a smaller town, hit the college football game on the weekend, and then take the NFL game in if you're going to plan the weekend. Oh. It doesn't always work out that way, but if you can make it happen, that would be fantastic.
Oh.
I've been to a lot of NFL games. I've been to multiple Super Bowls. I'm very lucky in terms of the course of my career to do that. I know Super Bowl will be on the list for a lot of people. We've had a couple of texts in saying, hey, the goal hasn't changed. Get to Lambeau Field. Anthony Coquitlam says, I want to take my dad to see his favorite quarterback and team in Green Bay at Lambeau. Let's make that happen, says Anthony.
I like this one. It's from Sandy on Twitter. Grey Cup in Hamilton this year and Tie Cats win. Scott and Karen probably asking a lot, but after this year, I'll take that. That's the thing. Maybe it's not as big a thing because it's just, for some people, bucket list right now is just going to see the Vancouver Canucks play at Rogers Arena again. Like, that could be it for some people.
Any Canadian market. Look, you can't tell me, Karen, there aren't Leafs fans out there.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
That are looking at this year and saying, this could be the year. And there's a lot of people across Canada that don't want it to be, but let me just go with this for a second. There's Leafs fans out there saying this could be the year, and we're not going to be allowed to go to the games, and we might not even be able to hold any form of championship parade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wouldn't this just be the luck of the Leafs? There are people thinking that way, I guarantee it right now. Like, we had one come in from Jeff in Langford who says, I'm 58. I remember when the Canucks started, my bucket list has one item on it. And guess what it is? It's a Stanley Cup. Even if I just read about it in the paper, I'd be happy, says Jeff. And I ended up moving to Siberia afterwards. It wouldn't matter. Well, that's great passion you have, Jeff. We're letting you dream a little bigger here. What do you want to go to?
Yeah, exactly. It's at this point, it's just seeing your team win the cup. It would be very Leafs luck, or I would even say, well, the Canucks aren't going to make the playoffs, but I know last year the conversation was it would be very Canuck luck, Scott, to win the Stanley Cup in the bubble, first Stanley Cup, you know, of their franchise's history, and they can't have a parade. There's no fans. It's in Edmonton. I mean, it would be just that luck. I like this. This is a text that comes in unsigned, but it's got a lot of very different things on the bucket list. One, witness a Canuck captain hoist the cup. Do Le Mans, do a NASCAR race at the Brickyard, and see Yankees in New York Stadium. I don't know about you, Scott, but I have never seen a game at Yankee Stadium.
Nope, not me, not the old one, not the new one. Haven't been there.
I was really, I'll say, choked when they closed the old stadium and built the new one, because I really wanted to go to the old stadium. I just think the allure was there, right? Because it was the renovated stadium. So it was kind of the quote-unquote original Yankee Stadium. I think that stadium is on a lot of people's bucket list just because, again, a lot of this has to do with lore. It doesn't have to even be with your favorite sport. It's just the lure of being in there, like to go out to Monument Field and see those monuments and see those great players that were played at in New York through all the years. I think that's a big one for a lot of people.
Well, you're rubbing salt in the wound. You're rubbing salt in the wound. Not for me, but Mark, okay, formerly from Yarrow, texted in saying, I had a trip to New York booked for last August. Yankees game. Bought, paid for, dot, dot, dot. He threw the ellipse in there. You know where that went. It went down the toilet. And hopefully, Mark, for you, that you're going to have an opportunity to get back there at some point in time. It's Rintoul. It's Sermon. Keep those texts coming in right now. A trade has just gone down in the National Hockey League. It is officially done. Brett Connolly, the Prince George native, is on his way to Chicago. So here's the deal. Brett Connolly, Riley Stillman, Henrik Borgstrom, and a seventh-round pick in exchange for Lucas Carlson and Lucas Wallmark. You know, if you're going to give us one Lucas, can you throw in two? So it's two Lucases coming back. Hawks using up their cap space to get a couple of young players here. Florida, they are freeing up cap space.
Yeah,
they are going to
absolutely make
a significant move. That's where this is headed.
What's Brent Connolly thinking right now? You know, you got Florida. We're pushing for a possible cup run. Good thing he does have a Stanley Cup a few years ago with the Washington Capitals, so he's got that in his back pocket. But yes, absolutely. Connolly, two more years at 3.5 per, Scott. So this is absolutely a move. Hawks are being one of those teams where they're gonna, you can unload salary on them, and that's what, exactly what Florida did. They've cleared roughly about $7 million in cap space. Thank you to Gregory Ballack back at Mission Control. And it's just, Florida's going. I'm very curious to see what comes from this, Scott, because obviously with Ekman Larson, no, that's the wrong one. Ekblad out.
Yes.
they're going to need to find another defenseman. And do we see a David Savard move maybe coming as well in this? So it's very curious to see what Florida's going to do next.
And do they go bigger game hunting? I know that
exactly.
Listeners in Calgary who are listening to this show, which goes across the West here on Rintoul and Sermon, are thinking, well, now could they fit in a cap hit like Mark Giordano's if all of a sudden the captain's name is on the market? And we're not saying that it is for sure, but that's been a discussion point in Calgary the last couple of days. There was a significant trade, as you and I both know, that went down in the last 24 hours. Last night, as we predicted, in fact, on this show, Kyle Palmieri heads up. He ends up heading to Long Island. He'd been sitting out for the last couple of games. Kyle Palmieri is on his way to replace Anders Lee, Travis Zajac, a veteran who's been to a Stanley Cup final before. Lou Lamoriello knows him well. Now, part of my rationale that Palmieri was going to land there was Lou Lamoriello, get one of his guys. I checked the timeline again last night. Technically not one of Lou's guys. Lou made his way to Toronto just over a month before Kyle Palmieri went from Anaheim to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. But I imagine he kept tabs on that. It doesn't matter what rationale got me there, Karen. I was right about where Kyle Palmieri ended up. Look, this makes a lot of sense for the Islanders, and, yeah. and the Devils end up getting a first-round pick back as a result of this, mm-hmm. and they move a little money along as well.
So here's the thing. The Devils could have maybe in a normal year gotten a bit more for this. They're retaining 50% of the salary for the two players. They're getting the first-round pick, but it's going to be a middle-of-the-round draft pick. We don't know much about this draft either, so who knows what that pick could be. Some people have said, you know, second- and third-round picks could be even more valuable this year because we don't know how... if players could fall, what they've been doing, we don't know. But at the end of the day, this is not about the Devils. This is about the New York Islanders. Losing Anders Lee was huge for them. So you get a guy that is solid, even strength. He can be on the power play. Maybe he slots in with Matthew Barzal. Maybe he doesn't. We don't know that. But for them, they get a top six winger. Travis Zajac, very serviceable. Bottom six for a centerman. You know what you're going to get with him.
Both guys are low maintenance. That's the other part of this, Karen.
Yeah.
Low maintenance guys. That's what Barry Trotz wants. That's what Lou Lamoriello wants. There's some certainty there.
The one thing that I like about Travis Zajac was he's in the final year of his 8-year deal that he signed in New Jersey. And last year, actually, he did not waive his no trade to go to the Islanders. So this year he did. Obviously, he's a UFA. He knows that, you know, at 35, this is probably one of his last chances to go get a cup. So good for him to waive that. Good old Winnipeg boy going to get that, trying to chase that cup. So I like the deal for the Islanders. It's safe, Scott, but safe in a way that they've upgraded their team as well.
Former Salmon Arm Silverback as well. Travis Zajac played a little BCHL hockey out here. Let's talk about the Vancouver Canucks briefly here. And we will get more into the trades because Colby Armstrong set to join us next segment. Keep those bucket list submissions coming in. We're going to do this all day long. We're going to filter them into the show. It's a great conversation to have, but we want to talk about some of the business going on around the National Hockey League. And Patrick Johnson had the article yesterday, came out last night. There is at least a little more feeling of certainty that the league is going to try to have the Vancouver Canucks finish its schedule. The league's been fairly steadfast. Ruthless is the wrong word on this, but they have been very patient with the approach, have not wavered in any case of COVID, whether it's Vancouver, Buffalo, or elsewhere this year. Hey, we believe that we can get this complete.
Yep.
We believe that we can make this work, and they think they can make it work for the Vancouver Canucks. Multiple insiders believe the Canucks, if they're able to get healthy in the next few days, that's a big if still.
Yeah.
But if they can get enough players healthy in the next few days, that they're going to be back on the ice, possibly playing a game sometime in the next 9 to 10 days. Elliot Friedman suggested that earlier this week. He said that the weekend of April 17th, which isn't this coming weekend, it's the next one, that was a loose target for the league. It means a couple of things, Karen. If the Canucks get back on the ice, not this weekend, but the following weekend, it means the league's going to have to move its finalization date for the regular season.
Yeah.
Right now, it's May 11th. It's going to have to push past that. I don't know it's going to push greatly past that, but it's going to have to push past that because it means Vancouver's going to have to play 19 games in a span of somewhere between, 28 to 35 days. It's a lot of hockey.
You know, I was thinking about this a lot last night, Scott, because another player was put on the COVID list yesterday. It's Nate Schmidt. So right now, I believe there's four players that are not injured that have not gotten COVID for the Vancouver Canucks. So assuming today we don't get another new one, haven't heard there's been a new one, that would be day one of their negative testing. They've got to go a couple of days with negative testing to think that this thing hasn't spread anymore. They're in the clear in that aspect of it. So maybe they can get on the ice midweek next week, early, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, just to get a practice or so in. Be cleared to do that because they're obviously going to have to skate before they can go a game. I'm of two minds of this, Scott. I understand the financial aspect of this for the league. I understand why they want to get all games in. Us here at Sportsnet 650, of course, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 960, home of the Flames. So there is a financial aspect for sponsors as well to get all the games in. But at some point too, I look at players' health and safety. I believe the league and the PA will look to make sure all players are healthy before they get back on the ice. But then there's the health and safety of how many games can you play in how short a period of time? And are you putting players at risk by playing too many games or being too tired down the stretch? So I looked at the schedule. There's Vancouver plays a four-game set against Ottawa, two in Ottawa, two at home. I could see something where the NHL moves that to the end of the season, Scott. Do those games need to be played? If they do, are they kind of played coinciding with the playoffs? Because neither of those two teams are in the playoffs. Like, there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to this.
Yeah, there would be some flexibility there. I agree with you. That makes the most sense. The Vancouver-Ottawa series being at the top of that list. There are four games between the Sens and the Canucks remaining on the schedule. Three games against the Flames. It makes sense to a certain degree to backload those. When it comes to health and safety, there are two things I believe. One, I don't believe that players will be, quote-unquote, forced to play. Coming out of something like this, if there's a player who says, look, I don't feel up to it, or I'm fearful still for the safety and well-being of my family, I don't think anyone's going to be forced to play. I also believe there's going to be enough flexibility with recalling players who've been loaned to Canadian teams, calling players up from the AHL during this span saying, look, we have 7 days. We can get you through the quarantine. There will be a competitive aspect of this that some people won't like. Well, it's not the Vancouver Canucks that were playing in early March that the Montreal Canadiens, well, sorry, wrong team, only team they're not playing, that the Winnipeg Jets are going to see this time around. Look, we deal with that in every sport every single year. Once a team's out of the playoffs, this happens in baseball, this happens everywhere. Once a team is mathematically eliminated or very close to it, what happens? Yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to rotate our goalies every single game. You know what we're going to do? We're going to try some of our kids to find out. And this year, more than ever, let's use a guy like Cole Lind.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at your protection list and you're the Vancouver Canucks and there's a guy that's on the bubble, maybe you want to see him play a couple of games in the NHL to help your decision along the way.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, that could have been the case anyways in a normal year, Scott, if this was not COVID and he was, say, in Utica. Maybe they would have brought him up just to see what he can do. Mikey DiPietro, maybe, when it comes to net, maybe get him a few games as well. So it'll be interesting to see. It's just more of the, I know the PA will have a say in this. It's just, I hope the league, when it comes to health and safety, make sure that their safety of the players down the road in games played is still at the forefront of their mind.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as big an issue. I really don't think it's going to be as big an issue as people make it out to be because of the flexibility of the roster with the taxi squad, the potential for recalls, and it just means that maybe your top-line players aren't going to play all 19 games. That just might be how it is. We're all having to adapt on the fly. She's Sermon. I'm Rintoul. Colby Armstrong joins this party next. Keep those submissions coming in. We've got some great ones when it comes to your sports bucket list. We'll update you on the Masters and start talking bucket list trades and a whole lot more with one of Sportsnet's best, Colby Armstrong.
Rintoul and Sermon.
Vive la Tour de France, says Anders in Issaquah, Washington. Listening to us from abroad. Thank you, Anders, for that. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. We got listeners all over the place, Karen, and we're asking people, where would you like to go? What are those places all over the place that you would like to go for a sporting event?
This text comes in, we did F1 Monaco one year. What a weekend. Now, please send more details because I'm very curious about this one. This one I like. This top five in order. Number one, British Open St. Andrews. Scott, I think we could all agree that's another golf one. The Belmont Stake when there's a chance to win the Triple Crown. Again, another great one. England versus Scotland at Wembley. And apparently that is actually set to happen June 18th of this year. So I don't know if the we'll be vaccinated and can travel by that time. Blue Jays playoff game at Yankee Stadium and the Spangler Cup. Now, the reason I say wanted to read this one, Scott, the Spangler Cup, because you and I have talked about this before off air about the fact that one for you is the World Cup.
Well, World Hockey Championships. And again, I don't put this on my bucket list, but it's climbed the ranks. I think it might be one of the most underrated sporting events on the planet for this reason. Always in a great city in Europe. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost always there. Every once in a while it's in North America, but almost never. So you're going to a world-class city. Tickets are accessible. Like, if you try to go to a Team Canada hockey game at the Olympics, you better have either an incredible connection or you better have a lot of money.
Yep.
You're going to be able to get tickets to go see, okay, not the cream of the crop because a bunch of those guys are playing in the playoffs, but you actually just don't know. it might be a year that the Oilers miss the playoffs, which is most years, Karen. So you might get to see Connor McDavid. Now, they're not going to miss this year, so this wouldn't be a great year, and you're not traveling anyway. But you know what? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's all of it that goes around. I've talked to people who've covered the World Hockey Championships on a regular basis, and they said, you can't believe it until you get there. It's just awesome, and the fans are into it in a different way, and you're going to a world-class European city in most cases. Like, World Hockey Championships, underrated sporting event.
Well, remember the year that Sidney Crosby went? And, like, so you might get that chance. Now, you're not, Sidney Crosby's not going to go to the World Hockey Championships this late in his career. But, like you said, maybe you get a Connor McDavid. Maybe you see Germany get a Leon Draisaitl. Maybe the U.S. and it's Austin Matthews.
Like, listen, Ovi showed up a couple of years ago.
Right? So there is the possibility. And you look at the top teams in the world, Sweden, Russia, U.S., Canada, Finland. Have to throw them in there, obviously. You're probably still going to get really high caliber talent. So, yeah, you might not be staying the Olympic stars, but you're still going to see some really good hockey.
Well, here's the
and
other
also,
thing.
Big ice. Oh, some of those guys on big ice, so much more fun.
Well, there's that, but there's also this. The way that the world of prospects has changed with some of the European prospects, for example, like Vancouver fans are keeping an eye on Vasily Podkolzin. This is another part of the Canucks' schedule getting pushed further back into May if it happens that fans will be of interest in certain markets. Like, Vancouver might get Podkolzin over for more games than it originally anticipated and burn that first year of his ELC and get to see him a little bit more. But with the way things have changed with the World Championships, a lot of times these top prospects are playing for their countries in those games. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're doing it before the draft, Karen. So with how closely prospects are covered now and how much more fans know about them, you might get to see a guy play against men before he actually hits the National Hockey League.
Yeah. You know what? You're convincing me. I think that's going to be on my list. I'm going to make a trip. I'm going to look, maybe not this summer, but I'll look for, you know, a few down the road and see what we can do. That's what I said. I think a lot of people might be thinking bigger and bolder. You could either go one way. You could go, okay, I just want to go see a sporting event. That's on my bucket list, just to go see a sporting event again. Or it could be the other side being, okay, because I have not been able to do anything for the past 14 months, let's think bigger. Let's think better. Let's think overseas.
I just wonder how many people eliminate the in-between stuff. That's what I wonder. So I do believe when people are allowed to congregate again, they will support local very strongly wherever they are. You know what? These teams need our help, or I just want to get to a game. I didn't realize how much I missed it until it was gone. I think the other is going to be true as well. Man, there was a year taken away from me where I thought I might be able to do something. I don't know when something like that might hit us again, so I'm going to make sure I get to these. I wonder if the in-between, it's only a two-hour flight, so I can do that anytime. I wonder if that gets eliminated a little more. Colby Armstrong is with us. Yeah. He of Sportsnet, former National League hockey player as well. Colby, thank you very much for doing this on a Masters Thursday. How are you?
Yeah, Karen, Scott, thanks for having me on. I'm doing well. We're doing good. The sun is shining here in Pittsburgh today, so yeah, the weather is starting to alleviate some of the stuff, and we got baseball, Masters, NCAA Frozen Fours in Pittsburgh, so we got lots going on.
Yeah, I know for you, that means something different entirely to everyone else. Like, most people are thinking, oh, I can get outside, I can go to a baseball game, I can get outside and play sports. You're thinking, I can hang the laundry on the line outside, I don't have to use the dryer.
exactly. Anytime I can innovate some new laundry steps. I mean, this is huge for my laundry game, but the sun is definitely will add a new wrinkle to my my operation. Absolutely.
I certainly want to talk to you about the trades that have gone down in the last 24 hours. Florida clearing some cap space again this morning. Kyle Palmieri's on his way to the island. But before that, we're asking our listeners, and I'm wondering for you as a former pro athlete, how you look at it differently. We're asking listeners about their bucket list. The Masters on, there's a lot of people who like the Masters and would put that on their sports bucket list. Is there something you would love to see in person that's above all others?
I would love to go to the Masters, and believe it or not, I had tickets to go to the Masters when I was playing for the Atlanta Thrashers. I acquired them. I got them. I was all set to go. It was the end of our season. We didn't make the playoffs. And it landed on the same day that I had the tickets and the passes to go to was the same day we had our exit physicals and meetings. And I couldn't go and had to give them up last minute.
Man.
So I was kind of upset about that. I don't know what bucket list would be. I think it would be pretty fun to do the Kentucky Derby. I don't know why. It just looks like really fancy. Like everyone's dressed up really nice. I don't know. I've never really done the horse racing event, and it always seems like such a big deal for the Kentucky Derby that it looked like it'd be something else to be at.
Well, when I think fancy, I think Colby Armstrong, so that makes sense.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm with you, Colby, on the Kentucky Derby. There's just something about, you know, the hats, the fascinators, the mint juleps, the possibility of seeing the first of the Triple Crown. It's just, I don't know, there's something about it. And I think with a lot of people, it's the pomp and circumstance of the events versus even the sporting event itself.
Yeah, that's what I think it is, right? I think that's what it is. Who's there rubbing elbows or shoulders with people that from all different walks of life that come to take in the same reason you're there. But yeah, it just seems like such a, like they put on such a good event, like more than just the race. Obviously, it's like done quickly, but the event itself just seems like it's got a lot of tradition and history to it that it seems like it'd be something kind of cool to take in. I can think of like, you know, a rocket ship blasting off in outer space. Would it be cool to be at one of those things too? I don't know what that entails, but that would be something pretty wild to see.
Go down the Cape Canaveral.
I don't know. I could probably go on and on with just some random things. Talladega, I heard, is pretty cool to go to one of those races. I heard it's just really cool to be at. So
shake and bake,
I don't know.
Shake and bake.
Okay. Shake and bake, baby. Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk a little hockey, though, because there was that big trade that happened yesterday. Kyle Palmieri, Travis Zajac, they're off to the island. I don't know if you saw this morning, but Palmieri, under Lou Lamoriello, he has the freshly shaven face from yesterday's beard that he had before he was traded. But on the ice, when you look at the fit for the Islanders, what do you see?
I think it's huge for them. I think it's perfect for them. I think both those players are perfect for them, and I think when you look at what they had to give up to get both of those guys, it wasn't that much. And I've got to think that there's got to be something where, you know, possibly those guys come back at the end of the year, you know, looking at something like that. But both those players, I think Zajac especially was kind of out of nowhere, but for Palmieri in particular, you know, a guy that can fit in anywhere in your lineup, he can score goals. I think he was a guy that a lot of teams were looking at providing kind of that utility guy that can do a bunch of different things through your lineup. And obviously, you know, you look at Travis Zajac's career and his game will fit perfectly with the type of game that the Islanders play. I think both of them will. So I think that's a big move. You know, when you look at them losing Anders Lee and adding both those guys to a lineup that plays a particular brand of hockey that's frustrating to play against. And those guys can come in and do that and then still add, you know, offensive punch as well, you know, with a little bit of physicality to their game. Pretty on brand players for what the Islanders were probably looking for. And then what's the ripple effect of that, especially in that division right now? So I think there's a few teams on the clock looking at what they're going to do now that the Islanders made those moves.
It's funny, the ripple effect, because I wanted to ask you about the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, they're just petering along like they do. Sidney Crosby's found his game again. They had played pretty well in the month of March. They lost two in a row lately, but they played pretty well. I was reading this, too. Crosby has played with 83 different teammates since 2016-17. Like, this team manages to still be in playoff contention, high in the division every year, even with all their injuries. Do you see them trying to make a move, or is it just kind of stay pat and just see what we can do with these guys?
Well, I think you're going to get Malkin and Kapanen back and Teddy Bluger back here in the next, I think Malkin skated for the first time the other day. You know, and Teddy Bluger's getting close to getting back as their third line centerman. You know, with Ron Hextall and Brian Burke coming in and kind of the assessments that they're going to make and, you know, comments on them wanting to add some, you know, sandpaper and a little bit of physicality. I got to think that they're going to try to do something. Now they are in a little bit of a tough spot cap wise. So it likely have to be some money going out for some money coming in. And that's how it's going to have to work. You know, like a roster player for a roster player type of thing, possibly if they can do that. So I think we're going to have to wait and see in the next few days, but I think definitely the Islanders ramped up the pressure on them. Look, they're playing really good hockey though. Like they've been playing some really good defensive hockey and something that they're probably not, you know, totally known for as a team, but they've really buckled it down except for the last few games and they've been getting good goaltending. And they've gotten some help in depth scoring a little bit, even though that top line with Gensel, Crosby, and Russ has continued to light it up. So they've had injury troubles all season long, but you know, just the fact of Hextall and Burke in there and what they're looking at this team and what's going to help them, I got to expect that they'll likely do something. And, you know, there's names out there like Foligno and others that, you know, kind of fit that brand of, you know, a little bit of sandpaper with that can play as well.
Yeah, I agree. There's pressure on Pittsburgh to do something. Colby Armstrong of Sportsnet joining us here today. A couple of trades going down in the last 24 hours. Hopefully the catalyst for a lot more. I think there's going to be more activity than some people anticipate because a move like the Islanders, with what Florida's lining up to do, it's going to put pressure on teams around them. You mentioned Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. How much pressure is there on that in that division for Boston to do something, given their inability to score goals right now and given the standard they have with that organization?
Well, I think there's huge pressure, and I think it's ramped up, guys, just because of the way the season's set up, right? Like, you play these teams, you know, 10 times in your, you know, season, 8 times, and, you know, you just got to get through your division. You're in the semifinals. So it's a situation where I think, you know, a lot of teams are thinking, you know, we're right there. Like, we have a chance. This is just one of those strange years with the way it's set up that I think it puts a ton of pressures on teams. Like you mentioned, like Boston adds scoring for sure. They're for sure going to do something, I think. You know, we've seen Florida, as you said, clear cap space. Like, how do you not do anything when your team has put themselves in the top of the entire NHL with their team? They lose Ekblad. You want to reward your team. Like, this is a season where you're going, look, we're right there. We've got a really legit chance. So I think there's a ton of pressure on a lot of teams. And maybe the ripple effect will, you know, boost all this, you know, heading into the deadline. But I think there's a lot of teams that, you know, feel they have a really good opportunity to go a few rounds. And, you know, you get to that semifinal position and, you know, you got to think anything can happen, especially in this league. So I think there's a lot of teams that like their teams, would love to, you know, spruce them up a little bit and add some things that I think they're lacking. And can that be the difference in putting them over the top to winning a championship this year? And a lot of teams, I think their teams are in positions to do that.
Florida looks like it's going to make moves. 1 point separates Florida.
How do you not?
Well, yes. Florida, 1 point separates Florida from Carolina. 1 point separates Carolina from Tampa Bay. Those three teams are in some type of arms race. If I have to ask you to pick right now, which is the best team in the Central Division, which is it?
Oh, good question. I'd have to go Tampa right now, but I do like Carolina. I do like the way Carolina plays. I question, and I think everyone does, their goaltending. But I don't know. It's just so close, and I just can't put it past the defending cup champs. But I think that's why there's so much pressure, you know, to put yourself over the top. What can you add? What can you do that can be the difference maker, you know, when you face – you're going to face them. You know, if you can get to the second round, you're going to face them for sure. And through those first two rounds, you're going to face one of them. So it's a situation where I think all three of those teams, you know, with Tampa Bay being probably a little bit more comfortable, but still look, you know, to still have areas and room that they can do something. I wouldn't be surprised with them either doing something.
And Colby, it's probably a pretty simple question, but is Taylor Hall playing with Nazem Kadri a week from today in Colorado? Is that, you think that's the likely landing place for Taylor Hall?
Well, they're talking about even Boston as a place, you know, where he may end up as well. And, you know, I think obviously he's out of Buffalo, and I think there's still lots of question marks, although he was an MVP a few years ago. But, you know, the winning is the big thing, right? The winning, and will he make your team better? And, you know, I think there's still that around Taylor Hall where, you know, he's a guy that's looked at as, you know, being an X factor, could be a big difference maker for a team. But if you put him into a core group, or you put him onto a team where he can, you know, I think of like Phil Kessel when he came to Pittsburgh, what he was here, a really good hockey player, a guy that could produce, obviously a guy that could get it done in the playoffs, but a guy that was not relied on like the Malkins and the Crosbys and the Letangs, you know, at the tip top of that, you know, leadership style where he's just comfortable where he was in that pecking order. I think you put Taylor Hall in a situation in a team like that where it's set up for him, I think you could find some success with him on a team like that. Boston has that, and I think Colorado has that. So I think they're two teams you could, you know, definitely see as a good fit for a guy like him.
I know not everyone has the cap space to do this, and you're adding an extra year as well. But one of the questions in Calgary over the last few days has been about the captain, Mark Giordano. And the reason that question has come up is because of the protection list. That expansion draft is coming pretty soon. You don't have to make a move right now. You don't even have to make a move. But if you start looking at who they protect in Calgary, a lot of people think that Mark Giordano might be on the outside looking in as far as the three defensemen that they choose to protect from the Seattle Kraken. If that's the case, do you try to move Mark Giordano? Do you go to him if you're Brad Treliving and say, where would you like to go?
Doesn't the expansion just throw a whole nother wrinkle into the craziness of this year and, you know, free agency eventually, the expansion draft, the draft in general? Like, it just adds in an extra thing to a flat cap world that we're living in as well, where all of a sudden you have, you know, franchise guys or guys that are looked at. When you think of the logo, you think of that player in this era, possibly being in talks of, okay, sorry, you're the veteran guy here and we've got to move you. But I could see it happening. I mean, I could see it happening. I think in general, hockey is, you know, to a point, fairly a loyal sport where, you know, keeping your guys and, you know, guys that have, you know, done it for you for a long time and guys that have, you know, been good pros in your organization for a long time. And I mean, heck, the Canucks have seen that, you know, come and go over the last few years, have they not? With guys not wanting to waive their no trade and guys being comfortable where they're at and the team saying, okay, you know, this is what it has when you have complete control of your no trade. But I can see this getting to a situation, you know, in Calgary where, you know, really, if you look at their team and look what's going on, who's safe there? Who would be safe right now with where they're at? So
Daryl Sutter.
Yeah, and judging by the post-game press conferences and his availability with the media, what he's talking about, it sounds like he's the only one that's pretty sure that he knows what he wants. And he's pretty safe. So, yeah, Giordano, a great Calgary Flame. He's had a good run, a Norris Trophy, a good career. But when you have to start looking at, you know, other things. I had some friends in Saskatoon who are Flames fans messaging me if I heard anything about Giordano as well. So it's interesting that his name has popped in there. I think a lot of teams would be interested in the type of player he is and what he could do.
Colby, one last one for me. This just came in just moments ago. Reports that the Vancouver Canucks have had no positive tests today. That's the first time in a week that we haven't seen someone added to the COVID list. Hopefully they're turning a corner. We've seen a lot of reports that different players are having different symptoms. You've played in the league. You've had injuries. But when you have injuries, you kind of know it's a timeline, right? 6 weeks,
yeah.
Whatever the case may be. This is when I'm projected to come back. How hard do you think it could be for this guys? Just the uncertainty of knowing maybe even just how their bodies are going to react when they get back on the ice.
Yeah, well, totally. With the health of this entire thing is just a giant question mark, right? And everyone's different. Like some people have zero symptoms and some people are, you know, can't get out of bed and are just put through the ringer with it. So, yeah, I think the question mark of it is scary, but, you know, at the same time, you know, it looks like it's, I guess, run its course and they've, you know, it seems like almost everybody has gotten this, you know, the virus in Vancouver. That's, you know, almost it seems with the numbers that they've had there. So, yeah, I think looking at this season, though, like no more in any year has any players or team or staff had to been more adaptable and day to day. I know, you know, it's kind of cliche. We're taking it a game at a time or a day at a time, but never before has it been, you know, so on the edge day to day of what could change, what could happen, where things could go than this year. And I would just think putting myself in their shoes or any player in the league right now or staff member of what to expect day to day and how to just kind of roll with anything that is thrown at you right now. You know, I got to, you know, tip my hat to the NHL and a lot of the players and teams for, you know, being able to do that. Cause I think that's really, really tough in preparation and getting ready and, you know, being a good pro and coming to the rink every day and trying to do your job to, you know, having a horseshoe or, you know, this darn virus thrown into the mix of everything, which is adds an element of, I think, fear and everything that goes with it as well. So yeah, just a wild year. And I guess I got to give it to, like I said, the players and everyone for just being so adaptable with day to day and everything that's happened with this season that goes into the season.
Yeah, we're all hoping for the health and safety of all those involved.
Totally.
Not just athletes, but everybody who's dealing with this right now. We're looking forward to better days, man. We all are. The sun's coming out, as you mentioned. I think we're very hopeful things are going to turn here in the next 2 to 3 or 4 months. And I look forward to seeing you post on Twitter a picture of you in a fedora with a fancy suit, sipping a mint julep and folding laundry in your backyard.
Well, you know what? Maybe we'll all head down there one day together. We'll go to the Derby together.
Let's book it, brother. Let's book it.
Let's do it, you guys. Let's do it.
Thanks, Colby.
All right. Appreciate it. Good talking to you guys. Thanks for having
you
me.
You as well. And for those who don't know the backstory, and Karen, I'm not sure that you've been initiated into this conversation. During the pandemic, people were doing homeschooling and everything like that. And Colby's got a number of kids, and so he was trying to help out. And he said, the place I can help him was, you know what I'm really good at? Laundry. I'm really good at laundry. Like, I've got my folding technique down. People don't know how good I am at it. So that's kind of been a running joke throughout the pandemic with Colby Armstrong, who's doing a fantastic job on Sportsnet. Man, our listeners are doing a fantastic job. These lists that are coming in, we've had some suggestions I certainly didn't think of. I imagine you didn't think of as well. We will dive into your sports bucket list next. And this, I tell my kids all the time, you know what? You got to read more. You got to expand your mind. I'm going to tell our listeners not to read more. And I'll explain why next on Rent, Tool & Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Back nine hasn't been as kind. Back nine has not been as kind to Corey Connors. So far, 3 over on the back, had a double on 13. Bogeyed 11 as well. Got off to a really nice start. Look, he's not out of it, and you know this as well as I do, Karen. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Thanks for joining today, and many of you have joined in already at 960, 960, 650, 650. Those are your textinations. Hit us up there. You just got to stay in touch. You just got to stay in touch early on. You just don't play yourself out of the tournament at the Masters on the opening couple of days. And that's what Corey Connors is doing right now. Look, he's not a favorite to win it. He tied 10th back in November. From a Canadian standpoint, we're all waving the flag. We're hoping Mackenzie Hughes has a great tournament. It'd be great if Mike Weir did something, but I think we all know that's not realistic at this point of his career. Just don't play yourself out of it. Just don't blow up on one of these first couple of rounds, and then you never know what might happen on the weekend.
Exactly. Conditions are pretty tough today. I mean, it's a pretty firm course right now. Sounds like wind has been a bit of a factor. So, Corey Connors was on a favorite going in. It's a good story. I put a little $5 bet on it, plus 5,000. So that net, you can tell by plus 5,000. Vegas doesn't really think that he's a favorite, but it's, obviously, fall last year at the Masters, very different course, a lot easier course. We saw with Dustin Johnson putting a course record out there with that minus 20, I believe he won with. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with Corey Connors. He has proven, Scott, over the past year, go back to the U.S. Open. He missed the U.S. Open cut. He missed the next cut at Punta Cana. I believe he has 9 top 20 finishes and 5 top 10s. So far this season. So he's playing some pretty consistent golf and some pretty good golf.
Well, just look at who he's in and around at the leaderboard right now. Like, he's 1 over through 14. Brooks Koepka, who's always in contention at majors, is 1 over through 10. Dustin Johnson's 1 over through 9. He's the defending champ, as you just mentioned. They don't have to make their charge yet. They just can't play themselves out of the tournament. You know, a guy like Rory McIlroy, you think of how important these first couple of days are to him. A guy who's looking for that career slam and has had one of those letdown rounds somewhere at the Masters year over year. Again, just to build confidence, just stay in it. You don't have to be at the top. There's a lot of pressure that comes with being at the top after round one.
Absolutely. It's like, can you hold on? Or probably most likely is you're not going to hold on when it comes to the Masters. Scotty, these bucket list trips, of course, the Masters is on the bucket list for a lot of people. And remember we were talking about, is it big or is it just something to get back to a sporting event? For Vancouver, one of the biggest summer events that we like to do in the city is go to Nat Bailey Stadium. It's not a sexy draw in terms of sporting events, Scott, but it is something that just, it's summer in Vancouver. And that's what Jay and East Van says. Post-COVID, there's nothing I'm looking forward to more than taking in a Seas game at a sold-out Nat Bailey Stadium on a long summer evening in July. Like, that is, for some people, just that. Just
and
normality.
We get that,
that's
we get
the bucket
that,
list now.
We get that echoed by Matt in Cochrane, who says, I've only been to four Flames games in person, but none at the Saddle Dome. Four times I've been to Rexall Place to see them there. I should definitely get at least one game in the Saddle Dome before it's gone. And there's most Calgarians who are going to be very happy to see the Saddle Dome go when it goes, because relative to NHL arenas, she's pretty run down. But there's a nostalgic aspect to that. And Matt and Cochrane kind of echoing Jay and East Van saying, I want to do something local. We're asking you about your bucket list today. The Masters is on there for a lot of people. You and I are both amazed at how many people have F1 on their list. And some of it has to do with the exotic locales. Like Monaco has come up a lot of times. This one comes in saying, not a huge F1 fan, but a race in Monaco, yeah, that would be pretty cool. That's what some of this comes down to. Where are you at in your life? How much is it about the trip and the surrounding elements of the trip as opposed to the exact sporting event itself?
Yeah, I have a friend who's been to the F1 in Montreal and said was probably the best top sporting event he's been to. And it's, you know, you just think about it. You can't follow like a golf course. You can't follow the car around the track. Basically, you're just watching cars zoom past you. And half the time you have to wear earplugs because it's so loud. And so it's not exactly it's not the view of the sporting event. It's because of the fact that, yeah, you're in Monaco, you're in Montreal, you're maybe in Bahrain, Shanghai, wherever else some of these events are held. They're, for us here in Canada, they're pretty amazing locales to go to.
Nelson in Calgary. You'd have to convince me more with this, Nelson. He says, Talladega is incredible. I went on a guy's trip a couple of years ago. It was amazing. Stayed in Birmingham, which was interesting on its own. NASCAR is a must on your bucket list, says Nelson. Again, from a sporting event standpoint, you're going to have to give me more. You're going to have to really sway me on that, Nelson, because it doesn't make it into my top five. But those who love it a lot.
You know what I think it is about that event, especially Talladega, Scott? It's just the people watching. That in alone is one of the reasons why I would go to Talladega or go to a NASCAR event in general.
This one comes in, Old Trafford to watch United v. Liverpool, definitely on my bucket list. Kent in Lethbridge echoing our shout earlier about the World Hockey Championships. Kent says, I told my wife the same thing for years. Spring in a great European city for a good hockey and a party, I'm in. I'm saying one of the most underrated sporting events on the planet. That's what I'm saying without ever having been.
I don't understand. I'm not a big wrestling fan, Scott. I guess it's a sport and it's an entertainment. But this one from Jason in South Van, bucket list item for him would be front row at WrestleMania in a hot spot. And another one came in earlier who said they were at WrestleMania in Seattle one time and it was fantastic. I don't necessarily know if I need to go see a wrestling event. I've seen them before in the past, you know, Bret the Hitman Hart and, you know, the... Who else was there? I can't even remember. The Ultimate Warrior, like back in those days I've seen events, but I don't know if you could convince me nowadays to go see a WrestleMania event, but I'll take your word for it.
You just said people watching is a part of your experience. You want people watching, go to WrestleMania, Karen. Like there's going to be some people watching.
Fair enough. Yes, there is. I mean, I have been to events at the old Winnipeg Arena, and I have, at one point in my life, I had the Bret Hart sunglasses, I had the foam fingers. I mean, when you're a little kid, and I got into wrestling back then, but just, and probably then I would have liked to go, but now it's more of a, I'll put that one on the back burner, but yes, people watching.
I was just happy to go to the old Winnipeg Arena to see the giant picture of the Queen.
Right? She's
that
still there.
Massive,
in the
massive picture. Just hanging there in the old arena. This
she
one comes
moved.
In. Jeremy from they're not getting rid of that. Jeremy from Sook, I've seen a game at Fenway and one at Shea Stadium, not a sporting event, but I also spent St. Paddy's Day in Boston, which I highly recommend. For me, the bucket list item has to involve one of my teams, says Jeremy. And again, this is what differentiates some of our listeners from others, whether it involves your team, whether it's a venue, whether it's all of the surrounding events. Jeremy says Canucks Game 7 of the Cup Final, Blue Jays in the series, Netherlands in the World Cup, Canada men's or women's playing for Olympic gold. I don't know if you're talking hockey or talking another sport. Maybe it doesn't even matter to you, Jeremy. By the way, Canucks Game 7 of the Cup Final. If history's any indication, not particularly entertaining if you happen to be a Canucks fan.
Just go to it in the arena, Scott. Don't go outside and watch it outside on a big screen. This one from Matt in Calgary. All Blacks rugby game. Now, I was thinking about this as well because I was thinking Aussie rules football. I have some friends that have gone down and seen Aussie rules football, and it wasn't like a national event or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's whoever the teams are playing against each other, and you've got hundreds of thousands of fans, and the event itself is, like, the game itself is very entertaining. Whenever it's on TV, I'm always captivated by Aussie rules football, but I think an All Blacks game, maybe against Australia in New Zealand, like, that would be pretty impressive.
I can't think of it right now, but it'll come to me, and I know a bunch of our listeners will text in. There is a horse race in Australia that basically shuts the country down.
Really?
Like, it's that big of a deal. I mean, you want to talk about a sporting country? Australia is a very sporting country. Really great sporting atmosphere. Massive sports fans. I had a couple of Aussie roommates back in the day. They would talk about it all the time. And there is a race that, like, people just, well, you don't work that day. Like, you just shut her down. That's the old get up and start having a couple bevvies when the sun comes up and see if you can make it till the sun goes down. I know somebody will text the name of the race in at some point in time. I told you I was going to explain why you shouldn't read. And here's where I'm going with this, Karen. A lot of our listeners do not like the Toronto Maple Leafs. They do not want any reason to like the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Nope.
So my suggestion would be if you want to stay in that camp, don't learn anything about Jack Campbell. Do not listen to his teammates talk about him. Don't read any stories about how he got to where he is now. And don't watch him conduct any post-game interviews like he did last night with Sean McKenzie.
After the win, guys just seemed to line up to give their congratulations to you. A long chat with Austin Matthews and a lot of fun here with Mitch Marner. I actually got the chance to talk to Matthews before the game about you, and he says he just loves having you as a teammate and he just loves having you around. When you hear guys talk so highly of you, whether it be Marner, Matthews, anyone, just what does that mean to you?
It's pretty awesome. You know, lots of words right now. It's been a long journey, and just to have their support, every single guy, it's crazy. It's a dream come true, something I worked very hard for, and, you know, there's not a day I don't thank the Lord for putting me here in Toronto with these amazing guys, and, you know, I don't want to forget my LA teammates and coaches there because they got the ball rolling for me in the NHL, and without them I wouldn't be here. But since I've been here, the team and the organization's been just amazing, and you know, I still got a lot better. I can still keep getting a lot better, so that's all I'm focused on, and we're just trying to have as much fun and keep winning.
I don't know the person, you don't know the person, nope. But the story is really good, Karen, and when you hear a person talk like that and you learn about how Jack Campbell went from 11th overall draft pick to soon-to-be washed-out prospect to a person who rebuilt himself internally and externally, you're probably going to want to see a story like that succeed. He's succeeding right now, and if he continues to succeed, well, then the Leafs likely succeed. So don't learn anything about Jack Campbell.
Yeah, the Athletic article that James Myrtle wrote was pretty impressive, just outline exactly everything that he's gone through. And Scott, you see this with some athletes, especially at a high level, and especially with the pressure of being drafted at such a high level. Like, I mean, he had the pressure of being, like, he's going to save the Dallas Stars, and he's going to be their long-term answer in net. He's going to be maybe the long-term answer for Hockey USA. You know, like, he had this pressure of going in, and then when you can't, maybe it's just the standard you set for yourself, and it's just not there right away. You know, it's that all of a sudden you don't feel worthy enough in the rest of your life, because what you consider as your standard is being a high caliber NHL goaltender. Like, that was his standard.
In his own mind. And that's
exactly
really
in
at
his
the
own
crux
mind.
Of it. Really at the crux of it, because it didn't sound to me like the Dallas Stars put that pressure on him. In fact,
no.
Joe Nieuwendyk, hey, sent him down. It takes a little longer for goalies. It's going to take, and that was really tough for Jack Campbell to take. He's a very good story right now. He's won 10 games in a row for the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is a new franchise record. Has he been lucky at times? Yeah, he's not as great as his save percentage would indicate right now. And yes, he's going to lose a game at some point in time. And that crossbar helped him out a little bit last night. But boy, they seem to really like him in Toronto. He's playing really well. I will throw this scenario out there, though, for the Leafs. I could see this if the Leafs are going to have success, which a lot of people in our listening audience do not want to see. But if the Leafs are going to have success, I could see this being a Grubauer-Holtby kind of run, a Gerber-Ward kind of run. And what I mean by that is, hey, Jack Campbell's the guy. And then maybe getting in his first playoff game, maybe things don't go great. Or maybe whoever they get matched up against in the North Division, it's a tough start. And then Freddie Anderson comes in, a la Braden Holtby, and it's the steady hand that you kind of thought might be the guy along the way but has fallen out of favor. Maybe it's that guy who actually writes things for the Leafs in the playoffs if they're going to go on some type of run.
Well, I will say this, Scotty. I think a lot of people in our listening markets will don't want that to happen because the futility of the Toronto Maple Leafs in the playoffs is what gives a lot of people joy, especially when Calgary and Vancouver don't get to see or unlikely to get to see their teams make some sort of run. So, you know what? I love the story. I love the kid. He pulled at my heartstrings yesterday when I saw that interview. He just seems so humble and so happy to be playing well, and it seems that his teammates really do love him. So I like to see these stories.
Well, there's another story involving the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's a far more serious one. Let's get to that and what they're saying.
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
There are a lot of people on high alert right now around Toronto, around hockey, because of what happened in Vancouver. And as you said before, there is a report out this morning that no Canucks players will be added to the NHL's COVID protocol list today, which is very good news. It'll be the first time in a long time that that has happened for the Canucks, and it could be the start of getting that team back on the ice at some point next week. More on that as it continues. William Nylander was a late subtraction yesterday for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the reason William Nylander was a late subtraction, well, because he had exposure to someone with a possible positive case. So think about that for a second. This isn't a person who's necessarily tested positive, but it's a person who there is a risk is going to test positive. William Nylander had exposure to that person, and out of an abundance of caution, he was held out of the lineup. But based on what's happened in Vancouver and based on what's happened in other situations, you can imagine why they're on pins and needles a little bit with William Nylander and that Leafs organization. Here's what the head coach had to say about it, Sheldon Keefe.
Well, we had a pretty good sense around lunchtime, you know, that there was a situation, and credit to Will for how he handled it in terms of being up front and letting us know potential situation, and then the medical people take over from there and kind of let us know how to proceed. But again, I think Will handled it himself very well. I think it's important to point out that Will didn't break any protocols here or do anything outside of the rules or the protocols and things like that. It's a very unfortunate situation. We're going to of course, support Will through this, and we'll have to wait for more information.
How much the virus is raging in Ontario right now? We just saw them go through a 3-week lockdown. Tim McAuliffe was on with us yesterday. He's got his 3 kids at school. They're homeschooling again. His wife is a teacher. She's back at home. So we've seen what they're dealing with there. Good news is that he was following protocols, and it was just something where it could be an unfortunate situation. I'm very curious, though, Scotty, when you look at what the Toronto Maple Leafs have been looking at for what they may need to go on a playoff run. We've talked about depth goaltending, maybe. We've talked about depth defensemen, maybe. But this is a scenario where if they were to lose a top 6 forward as well, do they need to go after more forward depth? You saw Ilya Mikheyev step in for Nylander, but that's not ideal to have him up there on their top 6. So it could put a little bit more pressure on Kyle Dubas to maybe even make another move. I know people have said maybe Taylor Hall. I don't see that happening, but it could change a little bit what he's going to have ahead of the trade deadline, just because of he's likely not going to be out long term, but if someone is, he might need extra help in that top 6.
And while people are very quick to jump to conclusions, like I saw this a lot yesterday, well, William Nylander's sitting out, but they're letting the game be played. The NHL, they don't know what they're doing. Let's just be patient here. Like, people want to have snap judgments on all of this. Karen, you and I live in the Lower Mainland, so you've seen a lot of this online as well. A lot of people wanting to cast aspersions on an individual or certain individuals in the Canucks organization, and that protocols were violated. We don't know. We really don't know. I've been of the feeling, and I don't know if you agree with me on this or not, I've been of the feeling that if someone on the Canucks or someone on the Leafs or the Habs, name your team, if somebody decides to go rogue and say, you know what, I know what we're supposed to do, but I'm doing my thing today, and it causes a disruption like we've seen in Vancouver, I'm of the opinion the NHL is going to bring the hammer down on that team.
Oh, yeah.
The same way we've seen in other sports.
We saw what happened in Washington. Four players. Samsonov.
Orlov, Kuznetsov, Ovechkin.
Orlov and Ovechkin. They broke protocol. And we, you know, no positive tests came from that, but they broke protocol. What did the NHL do? Brought the hammer down on them. They had to miss four games and had to be quarantined individually for that entire time. So I do believe, and I, from my understanding and what I've read, you know, the NHL has asked some very hard questions from the Vancouver Canucks, because to have this type of outbreak, you have to ask the hard questions. Did someone break protocol by chance? Did someone bring it in? Not on purpose, obviously, that's not what I'm saying, but was there some protocol that was broken? So I do feel that if anything was broken protocol-wise, I 100% agree with you. We've seen it before. The NHL would definitely bring the hammer down, and it probably wouldn't be... I don't know if it's fines, I don't know if it's loss of draft picks for the team, I don't know what it is, but I don't think players, teams are willing to chance that.
You mentioned those are the hard questions off the ice. The hard questions on them involve something you mentioned a minute ago, the trade deadline. What do you do? The Minnesota Wild snapped the Avs' lengthy point streak last night, and they did it in emphatic fashion, scored eight goals. Big night for Kevin Fiala, big night for Kirill Kaprizov as well, as he continues to lead the rookie points parade. Bill Guerin is the general manager of that team. He made some changes in the offseason. He doesn't strike me as a guy who's afraid to make a swing, but are they in a position to make a swing, given that they're not seen to be in that upper echelon of a Vegas and a Colorado in their same division? He was on the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard and had this to say about the Wild's approach at the deadline.
I mean, look, to answer your question, yeah, we're all in. Yes. Like, we feel we cannot just compete with everybody, but we can beat anybody. And anybody can beat us. I mean, the league is – that's just a league now. Like, you have to be at your best every night. Approaching the deadline, I'm not gonna sell the farm just for a, you know, for a rental that's going to, you know – blow town in a couple months. Mm-hmm. We still want to build. We still want to accumulate, prospects and draft picks and things like that. Because we're kind of building on the go. But what I do when I say that we are all in, yeah, we're all in because we want to win, and we expect to win every night. And we expect our players to do the same.
Not going to lie, Scott, when I think of the Minnesota Wild, I still have a hard time just getting over the fact that they're not the Jacques Lemaire Minnesota Wild anymore, because for so long, that was the style of play that they did, that neutral zone trap that was so successful for him in New Jersey. And it was, you know, it's just, it's not fun hockey to watch. It's, you can win with it, but it's not fun hockey. So I will say I haven't watched a whole heck of a lot of Minnesota Wild hockey over the last little while, but in looking at this, you know, they've got a team that has Zach Parise on the fourth line. I know he's just coming back from COVID, but when you look at this team, you're thinking he's the leading scorer from this team last year. Now he's scored three goals this year. He hasn't scored since late February. He was on COVID list, but you think of the Minnesota Wild, you're like, you think of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. And they have Zach Parise playing way down the lineup now. Like, this is a completely different Minnesota Wild team.
The infusion of Kirill Kaprizov into that lineup, Bill Guerin said, I believe he's the most dynamic player this organization's mm-hmm. ever had. And he did reference Marian Gaborik in that conversation, because Gaborik was more of a straight line speed guy, whereas Kaprizov can do it laterally as well. Getting him in there and the rebirth of Kevin Fiala have changed the dynamic for that organization. They're strong on the blue line. They are in a very enviable position from my vantage point heading into the trade deadline, because they're not expected to do what either Vegas or Colorado's expected to do this year in terms of a playoff run. Getting in is a big deal. The rest, from a fan base standpoint, will probably feel like gravy. So they're in that little bit of a honeymoon phase. Hey, this is better than expected in the playoffs. If they do anything, great. That's where the Vancouver Canucks found themselves last season.
Yep.
And it was internally, sure, there's pressure in the room, but there's not pressure from the fan base to go on this lengthy run. And when that's the case, you don't have to go out and make a big deadline addition. If there's something that makes sense, and it's not going to compromise your future assets to a big degree, okay, go make it. If not, hey, look what got us here. We're doing pretty well. Next year's when we take that next step. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. We'll talk more hockey next. We will also continue to incorporate your sports bucket list. Man, the texts keep coming in. 960, 960, or 650, 650. Kelly Rudy's probably been to a ton of things, but what would he like to go to? We'll get into it with Hockey Night in Canada's color analyst next, right here on Rintoul and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
Got the good outdoor vibes going. The weather's turning around in Western Canada. Balak wants people to get outside, have a good time. I knew our listeners would deliver. Producer Jamie delivering as well. Melbourne Cup is the horse race I was searching for. And we had people tweeting and texting, and producer Jamie on the group chat said, hey, Melbourne Cup is the race that kind of shuts everything down in Australia, and people have a great day. Good sporting country. We're asking you about your sporting bucket list today. Some people have sent in Aussie Rules football. I just saw one from Dirk in Calgary that said, on my bucket list, go see a World Cup ski race in Austria.
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd be pretty cool. I'd be down for that. I don't know if it wouldn't be up there on the bucket list, but it'd definitely be something I'd be willing to do, especially those Austrian ski cities, Scotty. Again, it's the venue. Like, that would be so cool to be in. I've been to Switzerland, and I've been to Austria, actually, but I've never been in the winter, so I've never been up to the Austrian Alps, but it'd be pretty cool, that's for sure. Remember how I mentioned seeing New Zealand, the All Blacks, play? Jackie on Twitter tweets in, watching the Haka, is spine-tingling, nothing like it live. I think that would be, like, just even seeing that live, not even the event, the game itself, the match itself, just seeing the Haka at the start of it.
I'm right there with you. It would be phenomenal to see. And there are others who have said, I'll tell you something that's got to be on your bucket list, is Rugby Sevens at BC Place when it rolls in. It's a fantastic event. I have been to that as well. For those who haven't, again, this is a little closer to home, and you're not talking 15s here. You're talking sevens. So the action fast and furious, which is great. One of the things I love about Rugby Sevens, Karen, it's got something for everybody. If you want to get all in your garb and costumes, yeah, it's all about that. Dress up in some sort of theme costumes with the group you're going with and get after it and get into the wobbly pops a little early and as late as you're able to take it. You can do that. You can go with your family. If you are a rugby aficionado, you can go just for the spectacle of the sport, but it's got a little something for everyone.
I actually went a few years ago when it was here, and it was so much fun. And actually, the person that I went with was like, we got to dress up. But I'm like, we're not dressing up. Like, that just seems silly. It's like, no, you got to dress up. I'm like, no, I'm not. I felt silly because we were the only ones not dressed up, basically. You know, just the two of us went. We weren't in, you know, a big group, so there's no theme. But yeah, I felt silly because of the fact that I was not wearing a big bunny costume.
I'm with you. I felt the same way. I went the first year it was here, and I didn't know that was a thing. And I felt kind of out of place, quite frankly. It's like being the person who shows up at the Halloween party not in any type of Halloween costume.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm not a big dresser-upper, but I probably would have done something if I had known to be that prevalent. It's really fun. If you haven't seen even Rugby Sevens live, I mean, just how quickly the game goes. I mean, it's basically, what, 2 7-minute halves or 14-minute halves, and it's running time, and you can basically watch a game before you blink. You go get a beer, come back, the game's over. But it's that fun to watch. Like, it's so fast.
And they shoot some fire. They shoot a little bit of fire. You know, like when the Flames score in Calgary, they have the flame and it shoots and you can actually feel the heat depending on where you're sitting in the Saddle Dome. Like, they have that for when the players come onto the pitch at BC Place. They're shooting a little. And the reason I know this is because I've been in a couple of different ways. I've been with buddies. I've been with my oldest daughter when she was very young. And she was just fascinated by that. She thought it was great. Like I said, it's got a little something for everyone. Mike says, I'd love to see Alphonso Davies play for Bayern in Germany. Now knowing soccer, I hope he still plays for Bayern by the time that I can afford to get there. Keep them coming in. We're going to welcome into the program, good friend of the show, Kelly Rudy, Flames color analyst, Hockey Night in Canada analyst, and of course, longtime goaltender in the National Hockey League. Kelly, thank you very much for doing this. How are you on this fine Thursday?
I'm doing well, and I know, Scott, I sent you a text last week. I'm just loving the chemistry between you and Karen, and it's a wonderful show. I listen pretty much every single day and keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you so much, Kelly. Thank you.
Really nice of you to say, Kelly, and thank you very much for joining the program today. Before we dig into a little bit of hockey, is there something on your sports bucket list, an event that you would like to see that you haven't had a chance to be to in your life?
Yeah, I've been listening, and I, you know, there's so many great, you know, things that people have come up with, and I like Dirk in Calgary that said a World Cup skiing event in Austria or Switzerland. I think that'd be amazing. And Karen, I totally agree with you. To see one of those Austrian or Swiss ski towns, that would be the event for me. I'd love to see those people roaring down the mountain also. But just the idea of experiencing that sort of livelihood would be so cool. I'm ashamed, really, to tell you something on my bucket list, because I've been invited so many times, and it's the event that's going on right now, and it's the Masters, and it's the one event that I wanted to go to for so many times. Like I said, I've been invited many, many, many times. I still have a standing offer, but unfortunately, the NHL gets in the way, and I feel guilty asking for, you know, even 2 days off. I it wouldn't feel right for me to try and ask for that. But and the same person that has that invite for me is a guy that has done work with Jack Nicklaus for many, many years. He's a friend of mine in Los Angeles. And so he did provide me with one of my great experiences in life. In 1998, the U.S. Open was at the Olympic Club, excuse me, just outside San Francisco. And so with his connection with Jack, I was able to walk inside the ropes on the final practice round. So on the Wednesday before the tournament started on Thursday, and to stand literally 5 or 6 or 7 feet behind Jack for a lot of the holes and hear the discussion between he and his caddy and the other players was just a fascinating event. The other one, and I don't know if you guys have discussed this, but when I was playing in the minors, Scott and Karen, I had the good fortune of playing in Indianapolis, and of course the Indianapolis 500. So I didn't go to the actual race, but I went to the time trials and inside the pits. And to hear the roar of the vehicles, if you've never been, I can just briefly explain it. So there's a row of stands right next to the pits, and you have to sort of walk out through this tunnel to get to the area in which you stand. And you hear the sound of the cars, but you don't see them until you finally make your way through this tunnel. And to see them charging down that track at 200 and some miles an hour at the time, along with the noise, was just a feeling and an experience I'll never forget. So you're right. I have had many incredible experiences, but the bucket list still is the Masters.
Yeah, that would be, it's one for me too. I'm watching it right now. DJ just hit a shot, and I'm just like, oh man, just to stand there and just to see him and or any of these guys, I'm with you on that one. Let's talk a little hockey though, because we've talked before the break, before we had you in here, about Jack Campbell, because his story is pretty incredible. And there's the Athletic article out there by James Myrtle that kind of describes where he started with Dallas, where he kind of fell to going to LA, and now his success with Toronto. I don't know if you know him personally at all, but just seeing what he's able to do, you just can't help but feel just fantastic for the guy.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? It's kind of like, Karen, we're along this ride or journey with him, right? You know, when he's sharing and how emotional he was last night on the bench post-game. And I think it's a story that, you know, should be told. And I'm glad that article came out in The Athletic, because it's also kind of like a lesson for young athletes and or people in any occupation. Be kind to yourself. And Jack wasn't for a lot of years, right? He had such high expectations, excuse me, which is never a bad thing. But at the same time, you should enjoy the journey and you should enjoy the experience. And I must say, I didn't take enough time to do that either. Now, I don't think I was as hard on myself as Jack. But at the same time, there has to be a reason why you're drafted that high. And now at 29, I think he's only played 73 NHL games. So I think it's a lesson for all of us. Just sort of enjoy it. Work as hard as possible. Yeah, that's always a part of it. Don't take anything for granted. But also, you know, be grateful, and he certainly is. It's an amazing story.
When you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously 10-0 to start his career, they're 8-0 this season. Obviously, Frederik Andersen, there's still question marks, at least from the outside looking in, when we don't really know what his injury situation is. When it comes to priorities for the Leafs at the deadline, should depth goaltending be one of them, or is there more priorities with them?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've been thinking about this for about the last week. Of course, the organization knows a whole lot more about Freddie Anderson, the situation he's in, than we do. So I think, you know, knowing what they know, they would make that a priority or not, depending on the situation. And by the way, that is a real concern considering Campbell's injury status also. And we know that he's been fighting through something basically all season. So that's not an ideal situation to be in. But I don't know. I like their team a lot, like a lot. I just covered them Monday here in Calgary, and I couldn't find many weaknesses in their lineup throughout it. And I know, excuse me, I've got my allergies. They're just flaring up. And I forgot to take my allergy pill today. But, I heard you guys talking about Mikheyev and now filling in for Nylander, and I thought he did a nice job last night. But when you have a guy that valuable on your fourth line, you know that you've got depth. And so I really like the team a lot. I don't know if I'd add a lot simply because I think right now the only question for them is how are they going to perform in the playoffs? We knew they were going to have a great season. That's just a team that's built really, really well. The only question is, how will they fare in the playoffs when it's all about will and determination?
If you had to add a goaltender to Toronto because you were so concerned about the status of Freddie Anderson and or Jack Campbell heading down the stretch and you wanted a better backup plan, would you target a guy kind of like a David Riddick out of Calgary, or would you be inclined to say, look, we can go with an Anton Forsberg type of plan because this is a break in only in case of emergency type of situation?
Oh, boy. I don't know. You know, they'd have to do something in terms of salary to add a guy like David Riddick. But if you were going to, you're getting a real quality guy. Forsberg is it's an interesting option. But and maybe I'm a little bit biased because I've watched David Riddick here for a number of years in Calgary. And he's an excellent guy. He's almost a little bit like Jack Campbell, that he's a real easy guy to like and to cheer for because their journeys have been somewhat similar, and it's not been an easy path for either guy. But I my wish list for Toronto would be that they don't have to add any goaltender simply because the health of Anderson will improve dramatically, and Jack Campbell will be able to work through his things. Because I think if you look at it on the surface, if you have those two guys and they're healthy, you've got a fantastic tandem.
Yeah, I agree with you. And even from a salary standpoint, if you're going to add something, Forsberg at his salary makes a lot more sense if you just want to have a little more depth at that position. Kelly Rudy joining us here this morning. Riddick maybe would make more sense for a team like Colorado to me. You've got Philip Grubauer. You know he's the guy. But if he goes down, what happens? And we did see what happened last year in the playoffs. Look, I'm not saying they're targeting David Riddick, but that makes a lot more sense there where you have some reliability in your backup position. But behind a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy very often, that's Philip Grubauer.
Yeah, that's a great point. and last year in the playoffs, we saw what happened when he went down. So I think David Riddick will be one of the guys that a lot of teams will be looking at. I think his salary, considering the level of goaltender salaries, favorable for a fill-in right now. But I would imagine there might be as many as 5 or 10 teams that are looking hard at David Riddick. And I would hate to say that he might be on the move because I really enjoy being around him. And, of course, that's during a normal season. But he's an interesting guy. I got to tell you, I have a story. David Riddick, he's so passionate, right? So we called the game a couple of years ago, and he was in net, and Dallas won in overtime, and there's like some mild goalie interference. And I called it as I saw it, and I thought that according to the NHL, they would have said that he had time to reset. And David disagreed with that. Man, did he come after me. I can't remember if it was after the game or the next day at practice, and he was so mad at me for agreeing with the league. And I kind of laughed, and I thought, that's the kind of passion I love. You know, here's a guy that believes in what he's doing. And I thought, cool. And I think it kind of even made our friendship greater.
That's a good story, Kelly. That's a very good story. Speaking of Calgary specifically, look, I listen to Daryl Sutter. You listen to Daryl Sutter. A lot of people do. Seems to me you can listen to his post-game press conferences and basically put a check or an X beside players on the roster as to who he wants to keep around. Is it as simple as that with Daryl?
That's a hard question to answer because, you know, and I have history with Daryl. Sometimes I think he's just trying to push buttons. And I wouldn't necessarily say that if you get an X beside your name after a particular game that you're off his good list. Because I know that, and even Craig Conroy's on record saying that there were times where he and Jerome wouldn't be having a great game, so Daryl wouldn't play him. But the very next night, then he plays the crap out of him. So I think that Daryl does certain things to try and find a way to get a reaction out of players. And so I'm still trying to figure out who he likes and who he doesn't, and moving forward, who might be a flame and who won't. But I will say this. In today's NHL, I wish we saw a little bit less of it. And Tortorella is the same sort of way. He just says it as he sees it. And Torts, by the way, might be one of my favorite guys in the game. But, you know, I just think sometimes there's a way to send a message, and you don't always have to call out people.
Kelly, just sticking with the Calgary Flames right now, our colleague Eric Francis did a story. He interviewed Brad Treliving, I believe, yesterday or day before, and he said, do you still believe in the core of this team? And Treliving quoted saying, I think we've got good players that have underperformed. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. We've underperformed, but today's not the day to come up with big statements about the core. We obviously know, and you're saying you think Daryl Sutter's still trying to figure out who is Daryl Sutter guys, but is this offseason probably the biggest when it comes to Treliving's tenure in Calgary, just determining this core?
I would say yes, Karen. And I say that I don't think they'll rush into anything. I have to admit, I've been their color analyst for, 7 years, ballpark? Mm-hmm. And this season in particular has me more frustrated than ever and more puzzled than ever, because I would agree with Brad's assessment about this is a good core. I thought coming into this season, this would be one of the top teams in the Scotia North Division, and they have performed so poorly, and in my opinion, so unexpectedly, that I can't figure it out, because they're good players. What did they finish with 2 years ago? 107 points, and basically, if anything, it's the same nucleus, and they've added to it. So it doesn't make much sense to me, and it's their lack of consistency and lack of spirit that I can't figure out. And so the management's going to have to figure out why it happened. They're going to have to do their debrief and figure out, is this a one-off? Is it just, you know, pandemic related? I don't know, but it's the most concerning season I've been around this team for sure.
The Vancouver Canucks, we heard earlier today, thankfully, at least at this point, no new positive cases of COVID. So that's basically a week now we had positives, and now we've stopped seeing them. So hopefully that continues. The NHL is pretty adamant, and they're sticking to their guns that they want to get the rest of these games in for the Canucks. I mean, there's reasons behind that. Mm-hmm. But is it realistic to think that, I mean, you're looking at about 19 games in the span of like 35 days. I mean, for players, that seems a little hard to wrap my head around even.
Same, but whenever Gary Bettman or Bill Daly have a plan in place, I'm pretty sure they're going to pull it off. They unless, of course, they have a different plan that they haven't shared with any of us. But these guys are incredible at what they do, and I have the utmost respect for the job they've done throughout this pandemic. You know, and number one, and they've talked about this for a long time now, is the player safety. So I don't think they'll do anything, different than that. I'm hesitating because now with William Nylander, I'm just really, really concerned about the rest of the Scotia North Division and what might happen. And with the variant and the third wave and how Ontario has exploded again, I'm just fingers crossed that we don't get more, but it seems inevitable to me.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I hope that we're wrong, and I hope that the players are able to protect themselves and these teams are able to protect themselves, but it's fingers crossed at this point in time as we slowly move through the vaccination phase, and I know more people are doing it, and good on all the people who are getting vaccinations. Some of our colleagues as well, Kelly, you included, that when they get vaccinations, they're putting that out there and saying, hey, let's all do the right thing here and try to get through it. And I know you can't mandate it. with NHL players, but I am happy that people are using their platform to try to help others through this, because I think we lost that somewhere along the way in the general public.
Oh yeah, it's extremely important, and I posted that picture for a reason, as you know. I mean, I try to use that platform of mine for good, and I don't try and get too political, but this thing is really important in my opinion. That if possible, when available, get your vaccination. I had mine 2 weeks ago now. My wife, I hope, is getting hers this coming week, and it's extremely important. And let's just do the right thing and let's get through this.
Well, hey, on you using your platform for good, I wanted to relay this on the way out to you. We had a regular listener, Matt, who texted us this morning when he found out that you were coming on, and he said, Kelly, I watched your interview on CBC detailing your struggles with mental health. As someone who suffers from chronic depression and anxiety, I wanted to thank you for talking about it. So that platform is making a difference, Kelly. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. And I just want to share also, yesterday I did a thing on Global TV about mental health, and I had a guy reach out on Twitter yesterday saying because of my message, he's already made an appointment to see his doctor on Friday. Mm-hmm. So that's so heartwarming when I get messages like that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for spending some of your time with us here today. I know you're a very busy man. Continued safety and health for mm-hmm. you and yours, Kelly.
Thanks. See you guys.
Thanks, Kelly Rudy. Hope that siren was not for him. He's doing the interview with us. Sounded like it might have been from his car, but always good to have him come on here. And Karen, we've been having a lot of fun today, and we'll continue to have fun mm-hmm. over the next couple of hours with our listeners, not to make it too serious. But I do think that we're in this critical phase right now in this country with this pandemic where numbers are going up again. We've got a lot of people who have pandemic fatigue and feel like they put in enough time. We got to support each other. We really do. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough to get through these last couple of miles, but we got to get there. And if we can all just lean on each other a little bit and continue to try to do the right thing, we're going to get through them a lot quicker than if we don't.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I mean, Scott, it's been a grind, and it's, you know, if you ask anybody, it's been a grind for them. It's not easy to be cooped up in home. It's not easy to not be able to see your friends and family, to especially when you're separated from your family. Like a lot of people, you know, I'm a transplant to Vancouver. My family doesn't live here. I haven't been back to Winnipeg since it'll be 2 years in August. So it's been almost, a year and a half. So it's tough, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. It may not be until June, July, but there is light. We just got to get there together.
Yep, and together is the biggest part of it. It's Rintoul and Sermon. We're together for another couple hours. We hope you'll join along. You have so far, 960, 960, 650, 650. I want to dive back into a bunch more of these bucket list stories mm-hmm. and lists that people are coming up with. It's fantastic stuff, and we want to give you some credit for what you've texted in today. And good decisions. What makes it a good decision for a coach, according to you? It's something we'll discuss during the course of this next hour with a head coach in the CFL as well. Former player Dave Dickinson joins us the next hour on Rintoul and Sermon.